Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on another bar reopening in Arcata, coastal lighting changes for Humboldt, and the Redwood Coast Energy Authority votes on a generation rate increase. But first, some local alerts and updates. This is KMUD News. Starting off with news from the KMUD studios. Today, Thursday, July 30th, KMUD hosted the second Touch a Truck event of our Fire Awareness Fund Drive with some amazing firefighters from the Petrolia Volunteer Fire Department. Here's some audio with Petrolia Chief Chris Gilda at today's event.
KMUD invited us down for their Touch a Truck event, and we were very glad to come on down from Petrolia and help out. It's a really good thing to be able to get out, interact with the public in a non-emergency setting, and show the public and right now currently kids about fire trucks and talk to people about what we do, how we help the public in general. Getting kids out and getting them interacting with first responders and the fire equipment and that sort of thing, and just how transformational it could be for a young person in their life to have an interaction that sets the course for the rest of their life and have it be a positive interaction and not a negative one. That's why events like this are so important.
It was utterly adorable to see so many kids interested in Petrolia's fire truck and some equipment they had brought along. We care deeply about our community. That's why KMUD is running our Fire Safety Fund Drive until tomorrow, Friday, July 31st. Because the information we share could be the thing that keeps your family one step ahead of the next emergency. Become a member, donate online at kmud.org, or call 707-923-3911. Keep the people you love informed by supporting KMUD Community Radio and the KMUD News Department's Emergency Response Team. Hit that donate button at kmud.org or call 707-923-3911. Next, in vehicle fire news. Two vehicle fires were reported today on Highway 101 in different locations. One was a Prius that caught fire on 101 near the Reynolds Highway in Mendocino. The other was an RV south of Scotia on 101 in Humboldt County that also went up in flames. The RV fire near Scotia was the larger incident, as flames spread to nearby vegetation and some structures were threatened. Thankfully, Rio Del Fire and Cal Fire were quick to the scene in a full wildlands fire response, and traffic had to be diverted. Thankfully, by 2:45 p.m., southbound lanes on 101 had started reopening. In Mendocino County, defendant Christopher Niall Kiger, also known as Chris King, and Jesse Goff, age 42, formerly of Willits, Ukiah, Clear Lake, and while hiding out from investigators, Florida, was back before the Mendocino County Superior Court Thursday morning for his formal sentencing hearing. The defendant was found guilty by a jury in March of various sex crimes against a child. Defendant Kiger was ultimately sentenced today to 24 years in state prison at the conclusion of what ended up being a relatively short hearing. The prison sentence imposed by Mendocino County Superior Court Judge Keith Falder is the maximum state prison sentence allowed by law for the crimes for which Kiger stands convicted. Because one of those crimes, continuous sexual abuse of a child under the age of 14 years, is legislatively deemed a violent felony, the good time/work time credits Kiger may attempt to earn in prison towards early release on parole should be limited to no more than 15% of the overall 24 years. When the defendant is eventually paroled down the road, he will be required to register for life as a sex offender with local law enforcement in any city or county where he may be allowed to live. He will also face 3 strikes punishment should he commit a new felony in prison or after he is eventually released. Also in Mendocino, there was a vegetation fire earlier today in the Potter Valley. Firefighters, including from CAL FIRE Air Attack, were quick to respond. An evacuation warning was briefly put out and quickly rescinded. An incident command stated the fire only grew to 1.1 acres. In Eureka, there were multiple brush fires in the area behind Walmart and the Bayshore Mall today, reported shortly before 3 p.m. Humboldt Bay Fire was quickly at the scene, and by 3:45 p.m., crews were already in mop-up operations. The blaze reached approximately 2 acres. There's a lot of minor fire activity in our region lately, but it only takes one weather event or a difficult location to turn any of these fires into a widespread event that could cause mass structural damage and lead to evacuations. It's a good reminder to stay prepared as we are now in peak fire season. In southern Humboldt, the Humboldt County Department of Public Works will be conducting a surface removal and resurfacing project on Redwood Drive from Monday, August 3rd through Friday, August 13th. Road crews will begin grinding the existing roadway and hauling away the removed surface material before paving a new surface. The majority of the work will begin in the intersection of Sproul Creek Road and to the south end of Garberville, as well as a small portion of the northbound lane just north of Sproul Creek Road. Work will take place from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Travelers are to expect 15-minute delays and are being asked to drive slowly, follow all traffic control devices, and all posted road signs in the project area. And up next, our main stories. This is KMO News. Arcata now has an additional bar besides Sidelines that wants to reopen, KMO News reports. There has been some controversy in Arcata in recent weeks with the planned reopening of the famously rowdy Sidelines bar. However, the area may soon see a greater resurgence in its bar scene, as the former Alibi Bar is now planning to reopen on the same block of downtown Arcata. At the July 28th Arcata Planning Commission meeting, the proposal to reopen Alibi was on the agenda. We'll start with a staff report on the potential bar reopening and proposal.
So tonight we are talking about reestablishment of a long-standing bar and restaurant on the Arcata Plaza, located at 754 and 744 9th Street. The zoning on the property is central commercial with a plaza area overlay. And both the owner and the agent are in the audience tonight and will be available for questions. So the site here is on the north side of the plaza. So just to give a little bit of background on the approval process, because there has been some conversation about reopening this bar and other bars on the plaza. One thing that I think is important for the commission to track is that the city works in partnership with the State Alcoholic Beverage Control Board in reviewing and approving permits that serve alcohol. So a little bit of history of the site. The Alibi has operated as a bar and restaurant for decades, according to the historic report that was submitted with the new construction in the 2010s that I mentioned. The Alibi served pretty much continuously from the 1950s on. The structure was constructed in the 1910s, originally as a candy shop, but was transformed into a bar and restaurant pretty shortly afterwards. And then the Plaza restaurant that's to the left of the Alibi was actually demolished and was a vacant property on the plaza for many years. In the early 2010s and into the mid-2010s, the previous owner of the property came forward requesting a merger of the two sites and developed the Alibi as we know it today. And at that time, there was a very thorough vetting process with the city, including the Historic and Design Review Commission and the Planning Commission, and pretty stringent operational standards were put in place at that time. Because the proposed operations of the bar are very, very similar to what was proposed previously, we're essentially bringing this back as originally conditioned from that approval.
The staff report also laid out the current plan for the Alibi to be an alcohol-only establishment, although the owners are planning to eventually operate a restaurant on the site.
What the current owners are proposing to do is to reopen in phases. And this is partially just due to the fact that the historic Alibi frontage is in disrepair and it's in pretty sorry shape on the inside. It needs a fair amount of work. So they are planning to start just with alcohol service. And then from speaking to the applicant, it sounds like within about a 6-month period, they'll be hoping to reopen the commercial kitchen and offer food service. The applicant is going for a Type 48 alcohol license through ABC, which is requiring food and alcohol to be served. So they will have to work with ABC to determine what will be acceptable phasing for the food service from ABC's perspective. They are currently proposing to operate from 8 a.m. to 2 a.m. The previous Alibi operation was authorized from 6 a.m. to 2 a.m., so it's a slightly smaller window of time to be operating.
A representative for the new owners of Arcata's Alibi Bar then spoke during the Arcata Planning Commission meeting, reaffirming the plans from the staff report, but also complaining about the slow progress of getting building approvals in downtown Arcata.
As far as the restaurant question, that's the plan. We want to take the old building and turn that into a restaurant and then have the other side as just a normal bar that we've had on the tavern since I was in college, which is some of the best memories I have of college. You were asking about the phasing. As two people that haven't been involved in this process before as far as construction, we are astounded at the just red tape and hoops we have to jump through. So the plan is to go as fast as we can, but we're shocked that we haven't been able to do much of anything yet. So yeah, ideally we'd love to have the other side open, the old side open in 6 months. I can't see that happening. So I can't really speak directly to how quickly it's going to happen, but we want it to happen as quickly as possible.
The Arcata Planning Commission then questioned the new ownership group for the Alibi Bar directly on a timeline, which again led to complaints on the business and development conditions in downtown Arcata.
Is there a time frame that we can count on for that transition?
As I was saying, as fast as we possibly can. But from what we've seen, that is going to be slow. I mean, just the fact that they are just now starting to clean up the fire, I'm sure you're very aware of the difficulties in doing anything in downtown Arcata. But yeah, we want to do it as fast as possible. But we don't know, we're not able to estimate.
With both Sidelines and Alibi planning on reopening, the city of Arcata may once again have a real bar scene. However, when that revived bar scene will happen may depend on the speed of planning approvals and other legal factors for these projects. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors has approved changes to a coastal version of a lighting ordinance, but the move was opposed by two supervisors. Daniel Mintz reports.
After a debate that focused on security and disability issues, Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors approved changes to the county's lighting ordinance in a 3-2 vote. At a July 27 special board meeting, changes to the coastal version of the ordinance were approved, and staff was directed to apply the amendments to the inland version, which will go through Planning Commission review. Requested by the state's Coastal Commission, the coastal version changes add a lighting restriction and apply it broadly. The inland version's limit of 2700 Kelvin, a measurement of light temperature or color, is applied to the coastal version with the change. The 2700 Kelvin range is considered as warm lighting on the yellow end of the spectrum as opposed to blue. The first prong of debate was advanced by Supervisor Rex Bone, who said limiting light temperature and applying the limit to parking lots and public areas like streets will affect safety.
I worry because the public has more problems than parking lots with break-ins. And, I mean, we see it at stores in our own area. I don't want to name any. of a lot of thefts, purses, things like that, or actually people being accosted at their cars when they come out of this. One of the reasons we have so many fences around parking lots of sensitive areas, and I just, less lighting at those places seems to be counterproductive to keeping our citizens safe, and I don't really know if it's going to affect the wildlife as much as it'll affect the other life that's walking on the ground trying to make it to their transport vehicles and stuff.
Asked for his take on it, Planning Director John Ford highlighted the ordinance's residential and commercial limits on lighting intensity as measured in lumens and a requirement for downward aim. He said, quote, "The Coastal Commission felt that minimizing the color to reduce the brightness of the light would also be an appropriate change." Another issue was raised by Supervisor Michelle Bushnell, who said lower intensity warm lighting is, quote, "generally harder to see for low vision people because dim warm lights lack the brightness and contrast needed with poor sight." During a public comment period, Sylvia Van Rooyen of Humboldt Waterkeeper vouched for the warmer lighting because it has less impact on migratory birds and recommended applying the broader warm light requirement to the inland version of the ordinance.
Blue light scatters more easily in the near atmosphere and reflects back to Earth, causing sky glow. So I'm sure you've seen the kind of glow around cities at night. That's sky glow. And the big contributor to that is blue lights. So the more yellow lights we have, the less sky glow we have, which in turn impacts migratory birds even less. So that's an important thing to regulate. We're really excited to see the blanket color temperature limit in the coastal zone, especially because we have so many sensitive bird species using our coast in Humboldt, but migratory birds don't recognize the limits of the coastal zone. So I think it would be really great to go back and incorporate this blanket color temperature limit into the inland version of the ordinance, where birds and other wildlife will be impacted by blue outdoor lighting.
Approaching the vote, Bone reiterated his security concerns, saying break-ins and alarm triggers at Redwoods Field Ballpark in Cutton, which he founded, have dropped dramatically since he, quote, "upgraded the lighting extremely there." But Supervisor Natalie Arroyo said the change follows a generally accepted standard.
The National Institute on Crime Prevention through Environmental Design, which is something that developed out of a partnership with law enforcement, so it's very much law enforcement supported, specifically says that uniformity is more important than brightness. To avoid harsh contrasts and deep black shadows, which hide potential intruders and make areas less safe, and to use warm color temperatures, 3000 Kelvin or lower, to improve nighttime color recognition and cut down on glare. So that those are all features of safety that they recommend. So I appreciate that these recommendations are in line with that.
With Bone and Bushnell voting against, a majority of the board voted to approve the coastal version changes. The vote includes directing staff to apply them to the inland version, a move that will be reviewed by the Planning Commission and then by the board for final approval. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
The Redwood Coast Energy Authority Board put their generation rate increase to a formal vote, KMUD News reports. The Redwood Coast Energy Authority has come under fire lately for its proposal to increase rates. However, this was likely unavoidable, as the authority would eat through its cash reserves without increasing the amount charged for power generation at current costs. At the Redwood Coast Energy Authority meeting on July 23rd, the proposed rate increase was put to a vote, and we'll start comments with a staff report on the proposal.
So what we're recommending today is to adopt retail rates at a 6% premium above PG&E generation rates. And when we say retail rates here at RCEA, we're talking about it's inclusive of the PCIA, the Power Charge and Difference Adjustment. And we'll talk more about that in this presentation. But just to remind that it is not a full bill increase, but it is just that portion of generation that we're talking about having a premium, and that it is inclusive of the PCIA.
The PCIA is a monthly exit fee charged to Redwood Coast Energy Authority customers on their bills. that covers past utility commitments and agreements made by PG&E and its predecessors. The Redwood Coast Energy Authority has paid over $118 million to PG&E over the years due to this fee and collected those funds from customers. The staff report then detailed logistics and what is allowed with the proposed rate increase, including fee changes performed directly by staff.
The resolution that's included with this item would authorize staff to increase or decrease the rate premium over PG&E up to 9.5%, so keeping it under that 10% as needed to maintain $26 million in cash reserves. We would look at that every 3 months after September 1st. So the rates would take effect September 1st. We'll continue to monitor in real time. And what we would do is bring it back to the board, not for necessarily a voting item. The resolution would give us authority to make those changes, but would make sure that you knew about it as soon as possible at the next available board meeting.
The Redwood Coast Energy Authority staff report then detailed advantages of the Energy Authority versus purchasing power from PG&E.
As far as the benefits, we really want to highlight for folks, local governments, powered by the community, having accountability, the fact that you can show up at our meetings and make your voice heard, I think is brings a lot of value. And that, we're made up of elected officials who are in touch with their community and can bring those values forward. The renewable energy we bring far exceeds state standards. Again, we have reached that 100% renewable and carbon-free portfolio. Offer a wide variety of programs. And I really encourage folks to, community members to take advantage of those programs. The rate increase is, fairly manageable. And it may be that, by implementing low and no cost energy savings, they could, receive some of that benefit back. And then I do continue to argue that we have competitive rates. To date, we have saved customers quite a bit of money. I think, over $5 million has been saved. And although for this moment in time, we're talking about a premium. For the last 10 years, we have not been a premium over PG&E, and we are constantly looking for ways to bring costs down.
The Redwood Coast Energy Authority Board then responded and agreed with the reality of the situation, including complaints of ongoing payments to PG&E due to the PCIA fee. Here's one example from the Board of Directors meeting.
Because it's just, again, one of those situations where we are continually subsidizing PG&E's bad energy that was procured that is now not wanted by the public, and it's not the direction, and having these assets of PG&E's that we have to keep supporting. So, it sucks. It doesn't feel good, but it is, and I really appreciate staff taking, kind of the board's request to not want to go above that 10%, really, working those numbers, showing us what it looks like and coming back and, willing to be flexible about that and kind of change with what's going on and what we see happening. Because as, we all know, we see how volatile these markets can be too and how energy prices change so much.
The motion was passed unanimously by the Redwood Coast Energy Authority Board, meaning they will now have a 6% premium over PG&E's current electrical generation rates in order to maintain cash reserves of $26 million. While customers will, on average, only see increases of a few dollars on their bills, future increases may be necessary, and the motion passed allows staff to set the increase at 9.5% if needed. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Renewed flames raise threats and unprecedented wildfires in France and Spain. KPFA reports.
Local fire officials said new flames emerged today near Grand Crohat, a popular Atlantic beach on the Lège Cap Ferret Peninsula. A fleet of 23 planes and helicopters, that's up from 18, dropped water and fire retardant as crews fought to keep the renewed flames from spreading. Officials said that about 60,000 residents who were evacuated as a precaution from the Highland and parts of Marignac and Essens outside Bordeaux's Ring Road could return today. No fires had broken out in the three areas, but residents were told to keep their mobile phones on and emergency bags packed just in case. French President Emmanuel Macron said the scale of the wildfires is unprecedented. He said, "We are facing events we've never experienced before. First, we know that the Landes and Gascon forest is extremely difficult to control, because of its peat soil and because of the characteristics of the pine trees, which create highly swirling fire behavior when the wind picks up. We experienced this in 2022. Top of that comes this extreme drought. Added to this, because of all these factors and climate conditions, we're now seeing so-called pyrocumulonimbus clouds, which are real fire clouds capable of carrying fire much further. We must be prepared for all of this. We are, and we will adapt. Thousands were ordered out of coastal resorts, while those returning were told to be on alert. Across France and Spain, roughly 330,000 people have been evacuated from vacation sites by huge wildfires. Spain braced for its fourth heat wave of the summer, with several blazes still burning out of control, including the largest in the country's history. Even so, Spanish authorities began lifting evacuation and stay-at-home orders for thousands of people after firefighters made progress overnight. Climate experts say the scale of the destruction is shocking, but climatologists have been warning about the effects of man-made climate change for a long time. Alexander Held is senior expert at the resilience program of the European Forest Initiative. He spoke with France 24 News.
The magnitude now is unprecedented and the impact is unprecedented, but they don't actually come as a surprise, to be honest. We've predicted climate science, climate change. Fire research is very clear. We have all the ingredients for disaster fires, and this is known. And this is discussed for decades, actually.
The Gironde fire has burned an area four times the size of Paris and forced 220,000 people to evacuate. French Interior Minister Laurent Nunez has said it's very likely the largest civilian evacuation operation carried out in the country outside of war. For KPFA News, I'm Max Pringle.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Daniel Mintz. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Rogue Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyone, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.